Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome back to the Market Musings Podcast, where Malcolm Pallet, the co-founder and chairman of Coincilium, is joining us today. Back again on the Market Musings Podcast, the regular guest on the podcast of all things crypto and NFTs, of course. So Malcolm, welcome back. How are you doing?
Thank you very much, Mark. I'm pretty good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you, Malcolm. Thank you. And of course, our co-host, Kenny.
Yep, all good. Good to have you back on again, Malcolm.
Hi, Kenny.
Make us jealous with the weather in Gibraltar.
It's not great today, but I'll never complain about the weather here when it's raining, because we get so many good days. But you know, I can give you a weather forecast. There's a little bit of a cloud over the rock, but other than that, it's fine. Everything's good. Nice in the summer.
We've had about 2 weeks of glorious weather, so it's a wee bit overcast today, but it's still about 20. Yeah. So for Scotland, that's tropical. So it is. Anything above five degrees is taps off, as they say in Scotland.
Really?
Yeah, but wonderful. It's good to have you back on again, and it's quite timely, obviously, with lots of things going on with Coincilium, but it seems to be that the old crypto market has bottomed out, and Bitcoin's come back to life
in the last few days. Yeah.
Did you ever doubt it? Did you ever think it wouldn't?
No, I didn't. But I was getting a little bit, let's say, tired. But no,
that's what the market's for.
Yeah, I know, and the stock market as well this time of year. But no, I have faith, and I've been dollar cost. Your bit of advice you gave me.
I don't give investment advice.
I was very careful. I said the wrong word there. Words of wisdom, maybe, that you gave me a while ago.
Oh, now you're patronising me.
Where you said I should dollar cost average. You shouldn't. No, you said you might want to think about dollar cost averaging your Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Is a good idea, because it gives you the nice average. So I wasn't too concerned, but of course, seeing it kind of drop down and slowly just sort of consolidate does, I guess it gets a bit boring, doesn't it? And you want a bit more action. So it is nice to perhaps see a turnaround. And did you watch the B word, Malcolm?
I didn't, I had signed up for it, but I've just been so busy. I think, is it recorded?
I believe it is recorded. Yeah, it is actually worth a good watch. There was some good short 10-15 minute presentation and talks before the main event with, of course, Elon Musk, Cathie Wood and Jack Dorsey. I don't know. It seems to come out of nowhere. I'm not sure where it came from, but I did kind of get the sense that there was a bit of a narrative shift. And I do get the sort of feeling that this whole thing is maybe a little bit narrative driven as well. I don't know. When you look at what things that go on and you start to see, the sentiment coming back on Twitter and some chat coming around. So you get a feeling that the narrative is kind of shifting back again to the positive. What do you think? What do you think's been going on?
I was really looking forward to that, but it coincided with a lot of other calls I had. And I do follow Cathie Wood particularly. I follow Michael Saylor. Sailor. Elon Musk, not so much. He's not my favorite billionaire. But then again, I won't tell you who my favorite one. I don't think I've got a favorite billionaire, to be honest. But that's another matter. You're right about the narrative. It does sort of ebb and flow. And of course, the markets are driven by emotions. And the main issue with crypto is that it's so easy to shift emotions, and it's so easy to actually for people, whales, whatever you want to call them, people in positions of influence, to manipulate markets. And it's got to the point where you it's very hard for regulators to actually step in and do anything about it, because it's far bigger than sort of regulated markets. So, they're just a little bit sort of out on a limb, really, on how they deal with these interferences. But I think that what happened was obvious now in hindsight. You know, when we were sitting at Bitcoin was sitting at 60,000-65,000, and everyone was looking at 100,000 or whatever, and you know, everything is positive. It's obvious that there's too much hype and too much emotion and too many people on one side of the boat, as my broker says. And what happens is, if you've got too many people on one side of the boat, those with deep pockets, those with the ability to actually influence the market one way or the other, can start rocking it. And that's how they behave. You know, that's how market animals behave. That's why shorts can do so much damage at any time. And it's not because, I mean, they should have a good reason to short a stock, whether it's long-term or short-term, but the pure dynamics of holders who are kind of weak hands, which a lot of the technology available to them can detect very easily, particularly leverage positions. So, you know, think about those people who are trading on Binance on margin. Well, all those positions are completely transparent to anyone or, you know, people who've got stop losses. They can be seen. So it doesn't take much to actually sort of take advantage of those people who are less sophisticated players than and with less deeper pockets. So, you know, it went up too quickly. Too far too quickly, and the correction that came in caused a lot of damage and a lot of collateral damage, but it didn't destroy Bitcoin. And obviously, as it's falling down, everyone who's got caught up in it is thinking, you know, where's it going to stop? And then, as you say, you get to your point where it gets boring, and I suppose you feel depressed and bored at the same time, because it's not doing what it was supposed to do. And that affects your mindset as to how you're going to behave in future. And the hardest thing to do is to buy when it's, when someone said to me, I think it's a very good expression, is the time to buy is when it feels like you're swallowing broken glass. And the it's time so to true. Sell is when everyone is jumping up and down and thinking it's going to the moon. And that covers everything pretty much with stocks. And don't forget, Coincilium's been through three of those phases in its existence. And, you know, if anything goes up too quickly, it is susceptible, you know. And of course, people jump in. You can't stop. Everyone has got their own, you know, judgments and their own reasons. And you can't stop them. And, you know, why would you want to? Because markets should operate freely and everyone should be responsible for their own actions. We can do as much as we can do to build a case that supports the business on a fundamental level. But, you know, and with Bitcoin, it's even, and crypto, it's even more extreme because you've got drivers who are actually, you know, some cases moving in herds. You know, so that's what happened with the Robin Hood guys and all these. You know, they act in herds and they swamp on a stock. And it's an interesting time. But the bottom line is, I agree with you. It's you know, it's the narrative is shifting. I particularly like Michael Saylor's views, and I would urge any listener to follow him. Even though he might get a little bit monotonous by saying the same thing, his understanding of the technology is second to none. And his ability to describe the impact that the technology of Bitcoin is having and is going to have is absolutely, I haven't really heard anyone who speaks as eloquently as him with such a great understanding. And of course, Cathie Wood comes across it from a very sort of very sophisticated investment background, but she gets it as well. And that there's no question that in my mind that crypto, particularly Bitcoin, to a lesser extent Ethereum, but I still have strong belief in Ethereum as a in terms of its potential to going up in value, is a game changer. I've been holding Bitcoin since 2014, so and I haven't changed my mind at any point. I'm not saying I haven't sold some along the way and take advantage and bought some back when it goes low, but unlike any stock, the difference is, with any stock, you might do a fundraise, you might issue more shares. There's never going to be any more Bitcoin.
Yeah,
that's it. And provided it's going to carry on doing what it's setting out to do and is demonstrating it can do, then the use case for it is immutable. And in that case, as an extra sovereign currency, it's proving itself, and it's not gone away. It's going from strength to strength, and yet only around 5%, I think it is, of the world's population has got exposure to it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, anyway. Yeah.
No, but you're right, though. I mean, when you feel you're master of the universe, then it's time to be thinking about selling. But I haven't heard the broken glass one at the bottom, I imagine that's what it's like, because even though I was sort of putting a little bit every month into Bitcoin, I haven't bought any of the cryptos. I haven't sold any of the cryptos either during the recent pullback. But certainly, over the last few weeks, I've been sort of thinking, oh, I don't know what to do. And then you see it turn, and suddenly you think, oh, actually, maybe I should go in again. But yeah, it's very difficult to do. But I suppose, as you say, 5% of the world hold it. It is going through an adoption phase and maturity phase, whole of the crypto market. These swings then, they're going to become less volatile, aren't they? And the ranges are going to become tighter. Is it fair to say that?
I believe they will in time, but I think in the near term, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think we've still got quite a bit of volatility to play out because,
That makes it more exciting.
Yeah, going from 5% to 10% to 20%, it's still very, very low. And you still got to get adoption. Adoption is going to take different formats. I actually use the term exposure, which doesn't mean people holding it necessarily directly, but at some point in time, maybe more pension funds will start buying crypto, and that gives exposure to the people who've got pensions, so that gets thousands of other people into it. It's not just the people who buy it directly or maybe buy it through Revolut, but once it permeates out, you're going to start sort of considering the exposure to it to be greater.
Well, we should probably ask Kenny his opinion, because Kenny, I know you hold crypto as well, and you tend to hold the lower market cap ones. What's your how are you feeling?
No, it was actually something just popped into my head here while you were talking away. And I mean, you may know this, Malcolm. How much of the actual Bitcoin is lost in the system? Because there was an article doing the rounds about the guy that lost £150 million worth of crypto in some council landfill site in the UK. And he'd offered the council £30 million if he could go and basically
that was in the early days. That was one of the kind of stories that came out when Bitcoin first started. People started realizing it could have some meaningful value, but then everyone who was mining Bitcoin in the early days started thinking, oh my god, what have I done? I've thrown the computer out, and it's I'm sure there's some Bitcoin on it. It is that sort of a recognition of something you didn't think it had any value, and then you find out it does. That's an example. And I think there's also, there's lots of other things to consider with that. One is the figure I sort of heard is there's about 15% of all the coin is never going to get it's locked away, hidden, lost, whatever. And that sort of makes sense. So you're down from 21 million to about 18, something like that. And then you've got other things, which is sort of what we refer to as dust, Bitcoin dust. You know, whenever you make a transaction, because it's divisible to 8 decimal places, I think, and you never sort of send always the whole amount. So it's a little bit like, you know, you add up everyone's spare change down the back of the sofa or in a pocket that you've, some trousers that you've thrown out. And that's every transaction, more and more dust kind of accumulates. So you will get this point where there's, you know, it starts to clog up. Well, perhaps that's the wrong term, but, you know, you start losing, you know, a tiny little bit here and a tiny little bit there, and eventually it adds up because you can't add any more Bitcoin to the system. So, yeah. You know, if there's, you know, fractions of dollars on a million wallets, that's real money that will never find its way into one lump. It's all decentralized and distributed. And, you know, you might have 10 cents here, 5 cents there. And, you know, at some point in time, there might be a billion people using it. That can, you know, that can impact it as well. So, yeah, I think the 21 million is notional, it's a figure. But you still got to consider, you're right, there's probably materially less than that. And that amount is going to grow marginally all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of dust accounts in some of the meme coins as well that I'm involved with. You know, you look and you say, oh, there's 5,000 holders, but you actually go on and have a look at the, you know, the bottom 1,000 holders, and, you know, and they're holding cents worth of these coins. And a lot of it's to do with reflection, because you get like every transaction, all holders get a pro rata share of the reflection. Mm. So, yeah, a lot of dust accounts that will never see the light of day.
I've just seen a news article. I'm a little bit late, obviously been very busy today, but yesterday there was a news article, Amazon definitely lining up for Bitcoin payments by the end of the year. So again, part of that kind of narrative we were talking about there, you know, another element, another episode appears there from Amazon. But in your opinion then, Malcolm, you know, is Bitcoin bottomed, do you think, now? Well, certainly for the time being, are there any key, and what sort of key levels, you know, do you look at key levels, or do you not worry too much?
No.
No. Okay.
No. What I know is that if I was to say I think Bitcoin's bottomed, you can pretty much guarantee as soon as that's out that it's going to go on another leg down. Sure. Because it's uncanny how the market just makes fools of us all.
Yeah.
And I don't really look at it in my concern, as long as I know that Bitcoin is here to stay, it ain't going away.
Yeah.
It can do what it likes in the process, because it's such a force of nature, a force of its own right, that you shouldn't bet against it. And everyone behaves in the way that they're used to behaving, because you have to treat the price of Bitcoin in the same way as you treat the price of anything that's on a market, because you only know that. That's our experience. That's what we've been used to. Mm. But it's not, you know, it's a commodity that is so limited and it's quantifiable in its limitations. And if you expect adoption to grow, and if you can actually pin off the fundamentals, it's a one-way bet. In the long term, in the short term, you're going to see games being played. But anyone who sold Bitcoin, you know, when it fell 90% in the early days, because they thought it was all over, probably regrets it now. So I don't really think it's helpful talking about sort of where it is, where it was, and where it's going. The only person I follow to a degree with that is this guy who runs the stock to flow model, Plan B, on Twitter. And you know, the more that goes into play, the more credible it is. He has got his critics, but the stock to flow model is a model that kind of shows how much Bitcoin, whatever, is being produced, mined, and takes into consideration the halving when it comes along, and it charts that against expected demand, and it comes up with a model which, if you look at it traceable, it does follow the adoption, the price does follow that chart.
Yeah, okay.
So and they're saying $100,000. I want to say by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely 100% sure that's right, but it's what my sort of in the back of my mind. That was it. If it's not, it's certainly in the near term in this way. And then once it gets to there, you're going to start seeing it level off a bit and then pull back and then move up and whatever. But all I'm still in the camp of people who believe that Bitcoin is going to be worth millions. I don't know if I'll live that long to see that value, but it's certainly those characteristics about it. I'm firmly believe that. And of course, I'm very fortunate, very, very fortunate to have been in this since 2014. And, most people have been in the space for that time have had exposures to it. And it's been life-changing for a lot of people. So, it's an exciting place, an exciting time. So that's a long answer, long-winded answer to your question.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And who is it you said you followed on Twitter, Malcolm?
Plan B.
At Plan B, okay.
I'm not sure if he's even at Plan B. If you just put in Plan B, I think his at is something like a billion or something like that, or 21 million. But Plan.
Yeah, okay, I've got, at 100 trillion USD. Is that might be him.
Yes.
I've got him. Okay, all right, worth a follow.
So picture this. So just moving away completely, but it's relevant to you, Malcolm. So last week I was on holiday, and I was staying, the best way to describe it was a hobbit bothy. So I did smash my head several times. It was in the middle of the Cairngorms.
Yeah, but you do that under Marble Arch. I mean, you're a giant.
I know. And
compared to me.
Yeah. Everybody's a giant compared to you, Malcolm. So they are. So there I was in my hobbit bothy in the middle of the Cairngorms with a few cans of beer and my laptop hooked up to my phone, and I'm unpacking NFTs. Crypto stamps. It's quite surreal when you sat and sort of thinking about it. Here I am in the middle of the Scottish Highlands and I'm unpacking NFT. Obviously, your crypto stamp didn't launch last week, but obviously the NFTs you could reveal. I think there was a few minor hiccups along the way, Malcolm, but obviously it's a pilot launch. You can expect these things. So it seems to have went pretty smoothly once we you got it ironed out. What's your thoughts?
Were you excited, Kenny, when you opened them just quickly?
Well, I had to stop and give the kids a shot as well because I did have when did I have? 110.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I get kind of bored after 20.
Oh, you got bored? I couldn't stop.
I gave the kids and they took turns and I just said, look, tell me if you get any rares, just give me a shout. I done pretty well. I mean, I got one ultra rare and quite a few rares. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. We did have some challenges when it was supposed to go live on the 19th. There's a few reasons for that. I mean, firstly, just so we kind of everyone understands, Coincilium in this case, we weren't the technical guys in it. We did the creative. We created the concept with Gibraltar Philatelic Bureau and with here in Gibraltar with input from people in Gibraltar and. We because we'd never really done it before, and when we started the process, we didn't have, we hadn't started Nifty Labs, or we hadn't sort of partnered up with Endorse to the extent that we are now. So, we needed a technical partner, and Red Fox were kind of doing some unique stuff in this space with their model for NFTs, which is different from a lot of other models in the sense that they are gamifying collectibles, whereas some other NFTs are art, work, sports, whatever. Still maybe collectibles, but not in the same way. But the gamification of it was what was interesting for us. We, you know, that just back to the initial kind of question, which was regarding the challenges when we launched it. We were sort of dependent on them to actually get the launch done. But we also had some other issues with regard to how the we were going to ensure that those people who bought the stamp were going to be able to redeem their NFT, because the postage took a lot longer than we initially expected. So, and that was kind of a little bit of COVID, a little bit of unpreparedness, and whatever it was, it's just there's still, and also people with late orders. So we wanted, the situation we didn't want to happen was that people had bought the stamp, even though it had crossed the threshold of the 19th of July, would then not have an NFT, because that wouldn't have been fair and it wouldn't have been right. And don't forget, there's no, you know, now they're live. Once they're sold out, that's it. They're gone. You know, we're not going to print. We cannot issue any more. We wouldn't issue any more because that's the whole purpose of a limited edition collection. So what it came down to was that we kind of had to find a way to make them go live without compromising the issue of the later owners. So we had to do this by a link, which is what is circulating now. And that allows people to open the NFT, but it took a couple of days for them to actually get the link right and get everything sort of as it needed to be. But we finally got there. But the opening is, I think that was a really interesting thing. And the feedback I'm getting from people is really, really interesting. I mean, it also is encouraging people to trade on the secondary market, because people through this link are kind of selling them on. There's a bit of a wholesale market going on for unopened packs. And don't forget, you know, in certain parts of the world, you make a dollar, it's quite a lot of money if you can do that 10 times a day or something like that as a supplement to anything else you're doing. So that's what's going on now. I think we'll probably have a bigger launch down the line, but we just want to sort of do this soft thing now where everyone who's got a stamp, we're comfortable, will be able to have an NFT either through directly applying and whitelisting as has been going on to the 19th, or they'll be sufficient for them to have. So we'll do that for the near term, but in the longer term, we'll sort of see how this plays out. Mm-hmm. But it's bottom line is it's very exciting. Just did an interview with Gibraltar Radio. The profile that this is giving people here is really interesting as well, because you know, if you look at, everyone's looking at sort of what stamps are the rarest and what are the most collectible, but each NFT is an iconic image, and it's got a descriptor by it, and it's got an explanation of what that's about in terms of the history and the context of Gibraltar. So although I think a monkey, a Barbary ape sold, which is an ultra rare, sold for $900 or something like that, there's still other NFTs which, because they're just attractive, they're the ones that sort of getting much quite a lot of attention.
Yeah, and this secondary market, Malcolm, I mean, there is a revenue stream there for coin selling.
Yes, yeah, it's being played out at the moment. So, you know, that's something that is kind of, we're watching it to see how it grows. We're not sure at this stage how significant that's going to be, but the more this sort of plays out, the more activity we see, then obviously it could grow into something meaningful. But the thing about this project, the Genesis collection, is that it's a learning, we're looking at it as a learning, a commercial pilot, we've called it, it's a learning process. So we want to sort of see how it works. We've learned an awful lot of lessons. We know now, you know, what kind of collections have got the best chance of actually being successful. We also know what features we can put in the next collection, and we also know, you know, how to improve the next collection. And, you know, just as an example, you know, when you collect a set, wouldn't it be good if the marketplace could acknowledge that for you, that you've got a set of common or uncommon or whatever, and then, you know, put some celebratory acknowledgement in, which you can build into that process. So, you know, the more we're looking at it in terms of how can we make this more gamified. And of course, the revenues from the secondary market are something that's interesting, but it's more interesting for us in terms of actually how we're focusing on our own marketplace build going forward, because that's something we'll have direct control over. And it's something I think that is really on an industry level going to appeal to brands. So sort of not necessarily talking about Coincilium specifically, but we are in this space and we are very interested in it. And it's something that you can actually do with smart contracts and NFTs is create models where creatives can produce their content, brands can produce their content, and every time that content sold on a secondary market, the creator or the proprietor whoever owns the content can get an ongoing revenue. You don't have to go back to sell it to any particular market to get the revenue. It's built into the smart contract. So that's really, I think, a killer app for NFTs, and it's something that we are seeing kind of being acknowledged commercially as you know, I would say almost the holy grail. So something that anyone who gets their head around it, has got the right commercial partners, can actually bring models into play that can then be adopted by, you know, major players who kind of can benefit from it. That's where all the opportunities are going to lie.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I suppose you guys are, I mean, obviously this is the pilot, so I imagine, well, you possibly can't say, but I'll ask it anyway. I'm assuming you're getting you're getting emails from perhaps other post office.
It's not, don't think just stamps.
I'm just because we're talking about stamps at the moment.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say, I'm not sure if the next one we're going to do is going to be a stamp. I'm not saying it's not, but stamps was our entry point. Mm-hmm. And it's where we saw, you know, a way of actually sort of launching ourselves. And I still think there's opportunities there. What we're seeing with this digital collectible market is something that's a little bit broader than that. So with stamps, you see a lot, I think, you know, there was also, I think, an expectation for there to be more of a link between the physical and the digital, which is, I think, an expectation, but we tried to be quite sort of clear about the way this was going to work, but I think people didn't have much of a point of reference. So I think some people were expecting there to be more of a link. But, you know, you can create a stamp and you create 50,000 of them, and then you create 50,000 digital certificates for and each stamp ties up with that. And that sort of shows there's the stamp, there's the digital certificate or whatever. And the two, you see, you've joined up the physical with the digital. And there's a definite legitimate use case for that. But what we were sort of impressed by, as I mentioned, was the way Red Fox were gamifying the digital collectible market. Mm. And if you're going to go in that direction of gamifying a digital collectible, then the relevance of a certificate of authenticity becomes less significant in the process, because you're talking to people about a totally different model. Yeah. So we had to make a decision. Do we want to create a stamp with a certificate of authenticity, or do we want to create an interesting collectible digital limited edition series, which has got gamification qualities. And we went for the latter, but we still wanted to tie in the physical stamp with it, which and the way we did that was we ensured that anyone who bought the physical stamp has the first right to buy the NFT. So that was what the benefit of that was. And we kept the same theme. The physical stamp is going to be, I believe, a serious collectible item anyway, because it complements the set. The design theme's the same, the colors the same, and it also comes in a presentation pack, which has got the history of Bitcoin. It's got the explanation of cryptocurrencies. One of those things, you know, my parents bought me Concord stamps when I was 6 or 7, whatever, and Concord had just come out. And I absolutely loved it because I was so taken by the technology. And now, of course, you know, God knows how many years on, you've got the same, those stamps, first day covers and all the information about them, and it becomes part of history. And I think that when people look back on cryptocurrencies and this technology, when they see the changes that are going to occur in the way the world operates, this will have the same kind of significance. And if there's a sort of digital, as a cryptocurrency commemorative stamp, I think that in itself for $6.95 is what it's selling for, is going to have value as well. And of course, it will be the first one that references the connection with the NFT. And those NFTs are going to be around forever.
I think it's a very interesting sort of perhaps discussion that you had there about how you were going to do it, because I think there was a bit of an expectation that it was an NFT counterpart to sort of prove the ownership of the of the physical, but actually the gamification side of it, that kind of digital collectibles, was actually quite fun, and I think there's real legs in that. And as you say, you sort of kind of done both. You've got a physical collectible there, and you've also got the digital collectible, and both of them complement each other. I mean, do you think in future, Malcolm, if you do more of these NFT projects, you think you might just stick to digital? Or do you think there might be scope again to do a bit of both?
I'd like to think that we could do both, but I think that each one has to have its own merits. So, for instance, it needn't be a stamp. It could be a another kind of good. I mean, you've seen these models where they, you know, they can put the certificate of a T-shirt or a trainers that connected to a digital counterpart. The key, of course, is that, you know, I think we'll always want to look at something from a gamification point of view, because don't forget, the other aspect which attracted us towards that is if we just had a certificate, then there's no recurring revenue on the secondary market for that. I mean, very little, unless the physical item is sold. So, you know, that from a commercial basis, we're far better to actually get into the gaming space, if you like, of collectibles, because there's that sort of secondary market trading going on, which is going to create revenues. If we just created a certificate which proved the ownership of the stamp, then they'll be very, very difficult to actually generate revenues from that, other than the initial sale. But that said, you know, in answer to your question, I think we've got the opportunity to do both. The main challenge with collectibles at the moment, or anything really in the NFT space, is with regard to, you know, the requirement for using a cryptocurrency. And this was a learning process, which in a way I'm sort of pleased a lot of our shareholders and people who follow Coincilium have gone through that process of actually trying to buy crypto and see what the challenge is there, because that challenge is where the opportunity is. At the moment, Kenny, when you bought your wax to buy these NFTs, how easy was that for you?
It was like the magic bullet that killed JFK. You know, I had to bounce it off various different providers, right. And you know, it was you know, the first time it took forever, but you know, once I sussed it out, you get quicker and quicker at it. But I mean, I've done that several times, and eventually you either exceed your limit or they just shut that option down. So,
This is the challenge.
Yeah, yeah. At the moment, Revolut seems to be my way of getting money into crypto, and it seems very efficient. But then, so was Transact, and they've killed my not killed my account, but they've just restricted. So
This is the challenge that faces everyone operating in this space at the moment, because you've got a sort of hostile environment with banks and payment processors. Where they don't want to encourage people to buy cryptocurrency. So whilst that's happening, and it's nowhere near as bad as it was at one time, it's getting a little easier. But we believe that one of the main drivers for this space is going to be when payment processing and accessibility gets easier. Right now, you have to go through a few hoops, buy your Wax, download your Wax wallet, and then you're away. It's not that hard once you've done it. But other cryptocurrencies, it's the same. And until it's easy for people to buy cryptocurrencies and it's seamless, there's always going to be a barrier to adoption for NFTs. And the biggest players like the NBA Top Shots get round this by having a walled garden, which means that you can only buy and sell them on that platform, and you can't transfer them off. Well, of course, the whole idea of digital assets, particularly blockchain-based digital assets, is that you can. They're decentralized, and you can store them wherever you want, and you can transfer them wherever you want, and you can keep them offline if you want to do that in a wallet. So really, TopShots doesn't need to be on a blockchain, and that's where you start thinking, well, what's the next iteration of NFTs going to be? And I think that the true driver comes from the crypto community. We're watching the way the innovation is drawing out there. And what I would urge anyone who's, I don't know if you've been following the hackathon that our partners at Endorse are running with us through Nifty Labs, which is, it's called the NFT Vision Hack. Mm-hmm. Have you been following that at all?
No,
we did put an announcement out on that.
Yeah, I knew you were involved with it, but I haven't actually been following it explicitly.
Okay. Kenny, have you seen any of that or not?
Yeah, I've been keeping up to date with the tweets, but I've not been listening to some of the replays. I really should, but again, it's down to, it's down to time management.
It's getting time, isn't it? And we're up to so many things. I've been listening to them. I've been attending the workshops, and it's great to see this coming together, because it's one of those few occasions where I actually don't have to do anything other than turn up, because these guys are just taking care of how it works. Now, they've got some incredible sponsors and partners in this involved. Rarible, which is an incredible NFT marketplace run by literally a community. Circle, which is one of the largest kind of financial payments providers. They also are the initiators of the USDC, which is a second largest stable coin, and they're all putting up prizes for developers to come up with solutions. So the government of Gibraltar have sponsored it as well, and Filecoin and IPFS, which are storage operators, because storage is a very important aspect of NFTs as well. And Endorse are running a track on and sponsoring a track to get developers to come up with ideas on what we refer to as generative art, which is an interesting area of potential future development of NFTs, which creates scalable projects. And I won't dwell on it too much because it gets a little bit sort of technical, but we think that it's well worth looking at the workshop recording and listening to what Gurang, who's CEO of Endorse and tech lead for Nifty Labs, is looking for in terms of development teams to come up with, because that will, we think, as I said, you know, the innovation for NFTs comes from the community, comes from the crypto people. It doesn't come from the top. It doesn't come from the big companies and the corporations. So you will see, I think, generative art and generative content. And generative content just basically means content that's not just created by one person, but it's created in collaboration. So you might use artificial intelligence to enhance the characteristics of a certain piece of artwork, and that could be contributed to from various different parties involved, and everyone has their own input. So if you think about it, you know, if your favorite artist wanted to create a piece of artwork, and you felt by putting a couple of dabs of paint here and there, which I'm being a bit sort of facetious about, but whatever it is, you can improve it, and you did that and it was accepted by consensus, then that would be indelibly in the artwork. And that would be something that would actually, you could say, I contributed to that. And you might even be able to get rewarded for doing so. So, you know, you think about that as a way of actually developing the future for non-fungible tokens. And that's just in one small area. So it's worth looking at all the things that are happening and going on. And this Vision Hack has been incredible, and it still is, you know, it's going on. We're nowhere near, I think end of August is when the final ceremony and presentations of the project is going to come. And Circle has sponsored a payment solution track where they're hoping that people will come up with more innovative ideas about making that process of buying crypto for NFTs or buying NFTs more simple and straightforward. And don't bet against innovators. Innovators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because NFTs will be a natural entry point for a lot of people into the crypto world.
Well, yes, yeah. I think they will. Yeah, and I mean, do you have any idea, Malcolm, on the size of the market or the interest? I know stamps is only one example here, but of course, the physical stamp collection world is obviously huge, and there's a huge community. Yeah. Any idea of the sort of not take up or interest or size of opportunity in effectively digital stamp collecting?
To be honest, with digital stamp collecting, I don't know. It's an interesting thing because it's taken a purpose, a function of actually, you know, what you buy the stamp for, which is to send a letter, a parcel, and taken that functionality out of it and just using the byproduct, which is the collectability, as the main focus.
Yeah.
So that's not something that is, you know, you can expect to happen, but it's quite clearly happening. So, you know, you move forward and you find that, you know, the actual purpose for digital stamps going forward will be purely collectible. Yeah. They just happen to be stamps, which are rooted in the history. So there's no reason why a publication can't sort of tokenize, create an NFT around historic articles that featured in their publication 100 years ago or 200 years ago, and then make a limited edition collection of those alongside others. And you know, there's no limit to what you can do with it, and that's just one area.
Or even building on the gamification side of things, and doing you know, almost is it Trump cards or sort of Pokemon cards, you know, cards that actually have you can play games with, you know,
Donald Trump.
Well, no, they're not called Trump. What are they called?
Trumps, yeah. I'm sorry, Trumps. When you said Trump, I'm thinking, do you want
I don't want an NFT of Donald Trump. Not particularly. No.
Well,
but it might be worth something. But now I'm just thinking more like, Trumps or Pokemon cards that you can effectively play games with, you know, and they have, there's more to it. And they become collectibles in their own right as well.
Well, that's right. I mean, there is a project that is actually making NFTs of playing cards for poker players.
Right.
So, you know, that's the collectible element there. And that's not, I think that's great. You know, a lot of people, poker players, are what they call cardists. So they carry around a deck of cards with them all the time. Okay. And, you know, someone comes out with a limited edition set of physical playing cards. And if they like the artwork with it, you know, they'll collect that. So there's all kinds of areas of in the collectible space, which are touch points. And we're fortunate enough now to have actually sort of dipped our toe in the water, found out about how to do it. We weren't a million miles out with what we're doing in the sense that we've definitely created something that has got some collectible attributes to it, which was all we were, you know, I won't say all we wanted to do, but that was one of the areas we were most concerned about, is what if no one wants to collect our digital NFT or images. And that's proven okay there. At least they're selling, that some are more interesting for collectors than others. So we're now there in that space, and of course, you know, it gives us something to actually showcase. It gives us something that we can say that to anyone who's thinking about creating a collection, that, you know, if it's worth everyone's while doing so, and it's something we're interested in doing, we can help with. So, you know, it's definitely been a good proof of concept. But there's no, if you ask me the size of the market, I'd say to you, what's the size? What, you know, back in the 90s, if people were to say, what's the size of the internet market? What's the size of that e-commerce? And this is just a bolt-on from there, because it's using a sort of an extra sovereign currency, which is native to the internet. And as long as the internet's around, cryptocurrencies will exist. And then you can say it sort of plugs in. It's got to have the same scale as the internet. If not greater.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously, Malcolm, without a marketplace, you know, there's no NFTs, and, you know, Coincilium are building that through your Nifty Labs joint venture. So, looking forward to see how that develops over the next few months or coming weeks.
Yeah. I mean, it's the partnership with Endorse is really, it's moved and it's got a life of its own. And that's what's really exciting about it. And obviously, the first project that we were originally working in stealth mode, because if you remember, we announced that we'd put £250,000 aside to start on the development of a stealth project, which we later announced as being the marketplace, which is now sort of in process. So that's a work in process, and it's going okay. We expect to get an announcement out pretty soon on that, but it's just a question of just making sure that we can clearly report what we've done to date, where we are now, and what to expect sort of going forward. So watch this space for that.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Malcolm, again, for your time on the podcast today. It's been good to catch up. Good to have a chat.
Yeah.
And thanks, Kenny.
Yeah, not a problem.
Thanks for that. And, we'll hopefully do it again sometime soon.
Great. Okay.
Okay.
Super.
Yeah.
Thanks, Malcolm. Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Ben and Russell. Tune in next time.